Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Good to have you with us. Happy President's Day. February 18th it is today. Special day. We appreciate you dialing in and being a part of the broadcast. Or I'm looking at the switchboard. I think a lot of people are playing golf today. So this will be one of those broadcasts that will probably download it a bunch. By the way, lots of feedback on last week's broadcast. We were talking about the reverse mortgages with Michael Banner. Go back and listen to that broadcast. It was real good. Well, a lot of feedback, more than I anticipated. I wasn't too sure about, you know, anyone going to listen to the reverse mortgage stuff. Well, it was actually pretty interesting stuff. Purchase reverse mortgage. In fact, one listener actually said, I got my parents buying a house. I want to use it. So it's actually got immediate application. So, but we appreciate you tuning in and being part of us, downloading the broadcast. One thing I want to say is we appreciate more than anything else the fact that you are telling others about the broadcast and sharing it around virally. That is such an important part of it. We have now had over 170,000 downloads of our broadcast in the last, I think it was 10 months is what the period of time. We're averaging 25,911 listens per month and downloads. So it's really amazing, and thanks to you, our listening audience. I recently read a report from CoreLogic, and the report was entitled 2012 Mortgage Fraud Trends Report. And I go, oh, this will be a boring report. The fraud's gone. We got nothing for these boring products now. Vanilla, can't do any fraud in this, can we? Well, guess what? I was a little surprised to find that there has been a significant spike in mortgage fraud again. So maybe it's the download trends, but I mean, we'll get you a link. You can go, in fact, go to the Lincoln on Lending website, www.lincolnonlending.com, and you'll see the link in the broadcast. Interesting that we are seeing a spike in mortgage fraud again. It's a fairly recent, and it gets into all the reasons why. But we have a special guest talking about that in the Hot Topics segment, Mike Davis. You're going to hear his unique perspective on fraud as he shares his story. So I'll create a little suspense so you stay tuned all the way to the end of the broadcast. Very interesting. So Alice Alvey put us in touch with Mike. Very excited to have Mike on and hear about this and where fraud can take you. Sometimes it's a little bit further than what you want to do. I heard one preacher say one time, sin will take you further than you want to go and cost you more than you're willing to pay. I heard that. It always stuck. I think of fraud that may be. Fraud may cost you more than you're willing to pay and take you further than places you don't want to go. So hear all about it. Appreciate you being a part of the broadcast. And we have got so much to talk about. I want to say also a shout out to the LinkedIn, the LO Compensation and New Rules, the Loan Originator Compensation New Rules Discussion Group. We are now up to 5,442 members. I just approved a dozen more, and so it is just amazing how that group continues to grow. Check it out. Great discussion on the LinkedIn discussion group. There's some great discussion on the about all the changes coming up. So without further ado, though, let's get in. Oh, wait a minute. United Guarantee, woohoo! They're our sponsor. So glad to have United Guarantee as a sponsor. Appreciate you. I encourage you to get a hold of your United Guarantee rep. They have some programs out there that can help you. They're just a fabulous resource, especially with the secondary markets. You know, the MI industry has provided such a valuable service to the mortgage industry, and United Guarantee has got a team that they put together that I'm really excited about you getting to know. Contact your local United Guarantee rep, representative, and get them into your office. Have them do a meeting. They're a really exciting group and a great group of folks. So without further ado, we got Joe Farr, who came in on his day off. It's a holiday. The markets are closed. And Joe Farr came in to be with us. Joe, thank you so much. Appreciate that.
I can provide perfect guidance on today's market.
Good.
There'll be no change in prices.
You know, that was brilliant analysis.
You are a guru.
He is.
Thank you.
So true. So, okay, so we can ignore what's going on today because there's nothing going on, but let's talk about last week, Joe.
Yeah. Well, Dave, we've seen several weeks in a row with increases, not big increases, but small increases in mortgage rates. And generally it's due to stronger growth or prospect for growth here in the United States. Last week, the retail sales number came out, and there was a lot of concern with this number given the increase in the payroll taxes that was implemented, effective for payrolls earned January 1st, but I guess first felt probably on the 15th of January. And then, of course, the rising cost of gas is really eating into people's pocketbooks. So retail sales came out. The January number was positive, which was better. I don't want to say better than expected, but there's a lot of concern about that number, and so it was good to see that it was positive. However, because as I mentioned, a lot of the impact of the payroll increase won't be felt until the middle of January and later, because that's when their paychecks are smaller.
Right.
There's still a lot of concern as to what this report might show for February and March. So yet to be seen there. But so far for January, the number was pretty good. Last week also, jobless claims fell. The New York Empire State Index rose to a very good number. The only thing that wasn't really great last week in the U.S. anyway was industrial production. So generally the outlook in the U.S. seems to be getting a little more bullish. We're seeing it in the form of announced mergers and acquisitions. But overseas, it's not so good. And
that's
if
right.
it were not for weakness overseas, we might have seen a bigger increase in mortgage rates last week. But the Eurozone's, and it's like its third quarter in a row, I think, where it's maybe longer than that for the full Eurozone, but where there's declining growth. And even Germany had a negative GDP for the fourth quarter. Japan's fourth quarter GDP was very disappointing. So the effects of weakness overseas kind of partially offset the effects of a little bit of improvement in the economic outlook here in the U.S. So the increase in mortgage rates associated with what's going on in the economy and what the impact that might have on the Fed and what impact that might have on future inflation was somewhat muted.
That's really interesting. What do we have coming up this week?
This week's, ordinarily I wouldn't say the minutes of the Fed meeting were very significant, but we sure saw that on January 3rd, the last time the minutes were released, there was a big reaction. In fact, there's about 0.75 point negative movement in prices for mortgage-backed securities. I think it's important to pay attention. I don't expect another big move associated with the release of the minutes. But it happened last time. So be good to pay attention to those minutes when they're released. They come out, by the way, Wednesday at 2:00 Eastern time. Also next week, the inflation measures are coming out, PPI and CPI, on Wednesday and Thursday, respectively. And the expectation for those are that inflation is going to remain muted. I don't think anything different will be announced. Then housing starts and existing home sales come out on Wednesday and Thursday as well. Housing starts, we had a pretty good prior reading the last month of the year. There's an expectation that housing starts will slow just a bit in January, but existing home sales are expected to be a little better than they were last month. So those come out, like I said, Wednesday and Thursday. I think they're both 10 and 10:30, 10 o'clock announcements. And then Philly Fed comes out on Thursday. So it'll be a pretty good, pretty busy week next week with again, the minutes and the housing data and the inflation data.
Going to be another interesting week. So, the markets are just I'm going back to your European comment. It seems like Japan, Europe, everything else is looking down. We're looking at our economy. We're getting some, at least some encouraging signs there. But is that a result of the Fed just having the printing presses running, Joe? And isn't that going to have some? I'm reading Harry S. Dent's book right now. Can't remember what the latest version he came out with about basically pretty gloom and doom about the economy
right,
long
right.
term. And he says, and he wrote a book that said, you know, he missed some projections because the amount of money the Fed has produced is printing. Is that one possible explanation why we seem to have better?
It's a very big reason for it. I mean, when you think about the bullishness in the stock market, it is a whole lot driven by cheap money. And the mergers and acquisitions that you're seeing are a whole lot driven by the fact that money can be borrowed right now for very low rates. And so I think it's all of it, Dave. And as soon as the market perceives that the Fed's going to back off on that, which they're going to at some time.
Yeah, they will.
It's going to be very ugly for mortgage rates. Just don't think we're there yet.
Well, we're not there yet. Hopefully, let's just enjoy this like tomorrow. What's that song, Andy Jones? The Prophet Doctor saying, tomorrow, everything's going to be fine.
The sun will come up tomorrow, yeah.
Yeah, the sun does come up tomorrow.
And a little red curly wig on.
And you know what I say about MBS Quoteline, Joe? When that does happen, you do not want to get caught flat-footed without having an MBS Quoteline service. It is, without question, the best service, giving you the most timely information in the most concise way.
Get it, folks.
If you don't have it, get it. If you want to learn more about it, stay tuned right for this message. We'll be right back after this brief message. Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it.
Sure.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quoteline can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quoteline monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quoteline, you'll never be out of touch with the market, whether you're in the office or on the road. See for yourself what MBS Quoteline can do for you. Go to MBSQuoteline.com to start a risk-free two-week trial. MBSQuoteline.com. 646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
You know how much fun it is to do this broadcast with this group and bring this information to you each and every week? I want to tell you, it's a real honor that you tune in, download this broadcast, and we do get so much positive feedback from so many. Thank you so much for being a part of it. Alice Alvey.
Hi, Dave.
I love it, Alice, when you get fired up. And before, folks, if you had heard Alice before the broadcast, she was just sputtering. You go, I just can't believe this. So I'm not going to take any more of your time. Hurry up. Get fired up. Tell us why we should be all fired up, Alice.
I just got really fired up because I was listening to the videos of the House Financial Services Committee meetings on FHA that have occurred over the last 2 weeks. So I wanted to give you all an update. There were two meetings. One was February 6th and the other one was February 13th. Well, on the 6th, they had witnesses from, you know, all the brain trusts out there. And so it was Edward Pinto, who's a resident fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. He says, under generally accepted accounting principle, FHA has a current net worth of $26 million, therefore a total capital shortfall of $47
billion.
And that was, of course, doing the math in order to maintain their 2% capital requirement as is required. Another statement that was made in that hearing was that the capital by Dr. Anthony Saunders, he said capital infusion for FHA is needed in the range of $50 to $100 billion. There was another individual from the Cato Institute. He said money to bail out FHA could exceed what was needed for TARP. And, you know, it's just the whole thing just started out so negative about FHA. And so, you know, okay, all right, here we go. Everybody's on the FHA bandwagon in that particular meeting. Then we get to the next one, February 13th. Now, this one was just mainly putting Carol Galante on the hot seat. And this committee meeting was titled Bailout Bust or Much Ado About Nothing, a Look at the FHA 2013 Actuarial Report. And I go, okay, you know, here we go again. And, you know, Carol Galante does a good job of trying to get, you know, her thoughts out, but everybody there is just, just bent on trying to get the FHAs in trouble, and what do we have to do? So ultimately, the Government Accounting Office placed FHA on the list of government programs that are identified as high risk due to their vulnerability to fraud, waste, abuse, and mismanagement, or the need for transformation. That's the technical way of phrasing it. So, you know, you have the chair of the committee pressing that the FHA actuarial, say that four times fast in a row, projections have been wrong for 4 years. Because, right, everybody, the whole actuarial study is trying to predict housing prices, and I don't know if any economist got that exactly right, right?
Right.
So the challenges in trying to predict the future is really where is FHA. Surprisingly enough to me, you know, normally Maxine Waters isn't on the same side as the mortgage people, but she was absolutely the one trying to make sure Carol Galante got a chance to say a few thoughts out there that, you know, she was actually pro-FHA. Maxine Waters pushed to get on record that FHA is not broke because all those numbers assume that if FHA is shut down, do they have enough money to fund all the potential, you know, foreclosures for the next 30 years that those loans will be out. And we all know FHA isn't shutting down, that there's constant revenue coming in. So there's always this battle between the way the math has to be done and what's the realistic cash flow of FHA on a day-to-day basis. So there's a lot of discussion that's starting to come about on should FHA move to something more similar to a VA model where it's not a 100% guarantee. And my question, Dave, to you and Joe and Andy was, you know, is that something that would really shake up the markets, or does FHA have to be a 100% insuring program in order to really continue to help the markets? Well, their concern is that FHA is 56% of the mortgage insurance market by last count. They're overall only 15% of the total market, but the concern is, you know, their big share of that insurance market. What do you think?
Well, I tell you,
that's my question.
It's a great question, and I'm getting a lot of calls regarding this, and I'd love to get the Profit Doctor's thought and Joe's thoughts. Here's the deal. If it's having it be a VA model where they don't cover 100% or them going out of business, I think the market's going to accept the fact, do whatever we can to keep FHA in business. So that's number one. So I think, you know, what's that old saying, show them death and they'll accept a cold? I think the fact is they show the markets the death of FHA, result of this, then maybe we can they'll accept more readily and have less impact if we have a reduced coverage. Your thoughts? Let's go to Andy.
We didn't give Andy a chance to prep before the show on the question.
I was in the other room and I was looking out the window at the bright skyscrapers of downtown Austin, and I had to go push the mute button. You know, anytime you affect perception or you potentially affect outcomes, then people react emotionally. You know, in 1957, it was like Markowitz had a finance article that changed the world. They started talking about diversification risk and systematic risk and all these other things, and talked about the reasonableness of the market. And even the Black-Scholes option pricing model of the University of Chicago is all based upon pragmatic markets. And what we all know is that the markets aren't reasonable. And so when you start messing with stuff, or you change what people thought they were going to get, or they change what people expected to have, then markets react, is kind of my take on it. And it won't last very long necessarily, because probably at the end of the day it's still going to be okay. But I would expect there will be a reaction, because there always is, because it's still just people.
Right.
Joe Farr?
Well, I wish I knew more about the difference in the market where VAs offered as side-by-side with FHA. It's my understanding that VAs typically carry a slightly higher interest rate or lower benefit to the customer, and that's because somebody else is having to assume the risk. I mean, what we're doing is passing on some part of the risk to whether it be the originator or ultimately the servicer on some of these loans, and in the end, the customer is going to pay for it. But that may be a small price to pay to keep a program that allows the customer to get a loan in the first place. So.
Yeah, I think that was, you know, what they were saying is if the fund is in this much trouble, you've got to do something to not only just increase the revenue coming in, but also decrease the expense on the backside. You know, it's just that balanced concept we talk about all the time on budgeting. You know, so that's why they're looking at the discussion of should the FHA insurance be reduced to something as low as 60 or even 50%, in which is the only part of the VA model that they're looking at. They didn't talk about going to a full like what you have with VA in the VA no bid process, where at some point VA can say, "Here's your guarantee. You guys go figure out what you want to do with the house."
But but isn't that built in, or isn't that implied when you say I'm only going to insure up to some percentage of the loan?
Exactly.
Somebody's got to take the risk on the other part. And then the other thing, Alice, is we've seen several recent announcements to increase the insurance charged on FHA loans, not only the percentage of the insurance, but the length that it will be collected, and that's purely to to rebuild the fund. And I wonder to what extent that those projections have factored those increases in. It certainly anticipates that the insurance, there'll be cash revenues coming in to offset at a greater extent cash flows going out on the new loans.
Well, and a big part of that, you know, what they were saying in the hearings is, yes, there's new revenue coming in, and VA's numbers always try and illustrate an appreciation in house prices. And a couple members on the committee were trying to make the point of, look, the report has been wrong for 4 years that the average house price has not appreciated, and therefore that's driving down some of the numbers. So, yes, there's new revenue coming in, but there's still a lot of legacy problems. That's the other thing FHA keeps talking about.
Yes.
And the most ridiculous comment came from one congressman, Stutzman, Indiana, who actually was condescending about the fact that FHA's average credit score was increasing. We're trying to reduce the risk. I thought that's what they wanted. That's what was getting me fired up. We're trying to reduce FHA's risk. So, yeah, we want to try and make a slightly better credit risk product. And here it was like you couldn't win for losing in that hearing. I thought, as an industry, we have got to get behind FHA. It's a great product.
That's
it has saved us, and we have got to get behind them and help come up with some good solutions to get Congress off their back in the sense as to how hard they're coming down now in some unrealistic numbers and projections. That's my 2 cents. That's what I got fired up about.
Yeah, we got to get there. You go. I mean, we're going to get some folks along from the NBA. We're going to be talking more about what we can do to do just that, Alice. There's some Senate bills and House bills and all kinds of other stuff. Run through that real quickly.
Oh yeah, I've used up more of my fair share of time. You know,
it's
always my favorite to continue to watch the House Bill 46, the repeal Dodd-Frank Act. Right, just so y'all know, I'm still watching that one for you. It hasn't gone anywhere yet. Senate Bill 205, looking to try and replace the director of the CFPB with a 5-person commission, and actually that one has a little bit of a higher odds of trying to work its way through, so we'll definitely be watching that one for you.
That's
the rest
awesome.
I'll get you up to date next week. So that's my report,
Alice,
for today. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it so much. Folks, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals, providing classroom and web-based delivery, and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record, performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees, both live and online, on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin.
Good to have you back. Bill Kompich normally is here live with us, but he had to be in an all-day meeting, so he graciously sent us a recording and some things we need to know about. Let's find out what Bill has it as I hit the play button on what he recorded.
Hello, Dave. We have a client visiting our office today, so I'm recording this. I'd like to touch on three areas today: QM, QRM, FHA, and an update on my employer, Fay Servicing. Regarding QM and QRM, the American Banker has an article about how regulators are choking off good loans. In their zeal to prevent another 2008, underwriting guidelines have become a simple yes and no checklist. This can exclude worthy borrowers. There can be problems relying too much on DTI and LTV. A number of worthy loans are excluded. You can have someone with a huge down payment and very high FICO score who also has considerable assets. One can argue that a borrower with the assets to pay off the house several times over, but a DTI ratio of over 43, is a more secure loan than lower income sub 43% DTI borrowers. How much of the current mortgage production qualifies for QM? Interesting numbers arise from two articles found at Reverse Mortgage Daily and HousingWire. Reverse Mortgage Daily looks at a survey that says that less than half of originators believe that 80% of current production qualifies for QM. The HousingWire article looks at a CoreLogic press release. CoreLogic says that only 40% of current production qualifies as QM. Think about that. CoreLogic says that 60% of current production is not QM qualifying. Next up are a couple of items about FHA. Reverse Mortgage Daily points out an editorial by Dave Stevens, former FHA commissioner. The FHA was crucial during the housing meltdown, but now its capital ratio is negative. He says that it's mandatory for the agency to return to its congressionally mandated 2% capital ratio. OC Housing News has what I consider to be a must-read article. The article says that by offering riskier terms than private competitors, the FHA today controls 56%, well more than half, of all the mortgage insurance market in terms of numbers of loans. The article says that the FHA will insure high-cost, extremely low down payment mortgage loans that put it in direct competition with the private sector. The FHA insures riskier mortgage loans at lower prices than PMIs are willing to charge. That is why FHA has 56% of the MI market. Finally, I'd like to share with you two items about my employer, Face Servicing. We put out a press release that appeared in several of the mortgage-related websites about how our revenue growth grew over 250% last year. I would like to point out that a good deal of this revenue increase is based upon performance incentives. In other words, our needs are aligned with our customers. The more money that we can make or save our customers, the better we do. The second thing I would like to tell you about is that an article appeared on the National Mortgage News website last week about how FAE works with realtors in the short sale process. We actively reach out to realtors in the early stages of a short sale, something that a surprising number of special servicers do not do. We have found that a good realtor can be worth their weight in gold during the short sale process. If you have loans that have a clouded title, something like a second mortgage, foreclosure judgment, a HELOC, or homeowner association issues, the realtor with their local market knowledge and contacts greatly increases the success of a short sale. If you would like a copy of the article from the National Mortgages about how we work with realtors, send me an email and I will share the article with you. Also, to get a copy of today's comments and all of the links referred to, you can go to the Licking on Lending website, click on the radio show, and you will see at the right-hand side of that page a link that will take you to further information. Today, we discussed QM, QRM, FHA, and servicer-realtor relationships. That's it for this week, Dave. I look forward to returning again to the show live.
I'll get Bill's knowledge, whether it be live or pre-recorded, but I always love him live because I get to ask him questions. But anyway, thank you very much, Bill. Profit Doctor, you know what? You
shared
so much. My head was hurting from the wisdom you shared during Alice's segment. That was good analysis. A lot of people write us and go, the Profit Doctor's really smart, isn't he? I go, he uses really. Yes. So anyway, what pearls of wisdom do you have for us, my friend?
Well, I guess I'm a Republican because I have a memory like an elephant.
Oh.
It's worthless information, but I do remember a lot of superfluous information, like my grandmother's phone number who died 20 years ago. What's the point of remembering that? But I don't do it on purpose. It just happens. Well, you know what, Dave? You and Alice were talking about the FHA fund, and you mentioned something about $42 billion. And I was wondering, is that a lot?
Yep. Has everyone lost touch with just how much that is?
That's a lot. I think if we were to stack it up, we could probably get a pretty tall stack of hot dogs or whatever it is you wanted to stack. But I was watching CNBC. I wasn't feeling well this weekend, so I spent a lot of time, probably more than I should have.
The doctor was down and out.
I know. I'm on the mend, though. I'm on the mend. and was watching CNBC, and I was watching for you to be on there because I know you're on CNBC regularly, and I didn't get to see you this weekend. But one thing I did get to see is there was Warren Buffett and a number of other folks were talking about merger and acquisition activity,
right,
things that they're looking at. And the one really interesting phrase that kept coming up over and over that we all know is that you can't manage what you can't measure.
Yeah.
They said this 10, 15 times relating to merger and activities. You can't manage what you can't measure. And so, you know, merger and acquisition activity is really all about the very first thing, can we measure it? Because if we can measure it, we can manage it, and if we can manage it, we can predict it, and if we can predict it, we can buy it.
Right.
So if you want to be able to be purchased, you got to go backwards to the measurement part because you got to be able to measure it so you can manage it and manage it so you can predict it and then so forth. You can then sell it. So I wonder, I was thinking about mortgage companies and some of the folks that we see and talk about on a daily basis. And, you know, some mortgage companies are still really struggling with their basic measurements, whether if it's KPIs on how many
loans
per employee.
Key performance indicators, yep.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Key performance indicators, how many loans per employee, how many loans per processor, what's your turn times in underwriting. People usually have a good idea about that because originators are always screaming about it. But how long is a loan in shipping? Ask an originator, how long is a loan in shipping? I bet the originators don't know that because don't care. It doesn't affect them. But I tell you what it does affect. It affects cash flow.
Right.
Time in shipping, loans, time, days in shipping per file is a huge number for a mortgage company because that's how you get cash. You can
right.
sell your loans, get gain on sale, get your SRP maybe if you're selling released, and you're getting your money. And how many mortgage companies know the answer to those questions? We as an industry have to do what CNBC talks about with Warren Buffett and all the other big M&A people, is we have to be able to measure our businesses and measure it not just your financials. And I'd argue that a lot of mortgage company financials aren't tuned up well enough to do the NMLS correctly. So we've really got to start with some very foundational, fundamental elements in the financial aspect of just managing your business, getting good financials. And by the way, we are launching another accounting series through
wow.
Campus MBA. We are starting coming up on, I think it is March, let me check my calendar here real quick. March the 14th, I believe it is. We're launching an accounting series. I think it runs at maybe it's 11 Central, 12 Eastern. It's a four-part series rather than a three-part series. What we've done is we've gotten feedback that when we get into the third segment, when we're talking about hedging and hedging for loan accounting, the gap associated with unrealized gain in the pipeline is it just gets really complicated. We teach this topic to CPAs and their eyes roll back in their head. So how do you think the mortgage company accounting people are going to feel?
Yeah.
It's like teaching calculus to somebody who's never had algebra. And so what we're doing is we're expanding that section. We're taking section 3 and we're going to talk primarily about the hedging, how it works, how it all fits together, and then a little bit about the accounting. And then session 4 is really the prerequisite being you have to have attended the previous sessions, and then session 4 is a deep, deep dive into the world of loan accounting, journal entries, trial balance entries, where the numbers come from, how you know if the numbers are right. This hedge accounting is probably the most complex topic the mortgage bankers face, and it affects the financial presentation to the warehouse line lenders that when it's substantially wrong, you could end up with all kinds of federal violations because you misrepresented your financial condition to a federally regulated financial institution. And it's astounding to me how the cavalier people take their warehouse statements and sending,
right.
well, you know, print the financial statements, send them to the warehouse bank, who cares? You know, that's a really dangerous perspective. And then from there, then, obviously, Dave, the key performance indicators. So there's just a lot to this. It's the basics in accounting, being able to do your numbers right, and then also be able to measure every activity within your business, because if you can measure it, you can manage it. If you can manage it, you can predict it. And if you can predict it, you can sell it. So if you ever want to sell your company, make sure you got this stuff nailed down well now.
Get it now. Get on that webinar. It's a great material. I've had the privilege of being a part of it with Andy in the past. It is, without question, one of those webinars that, even if you've been through it before, go through it again. It's backed by popular demand. Appreciate you being a part of the broadcast, Andy, and taking time, especially when you haven't been feeling well. I'm glad you're on the mend, though. We're very glad you're on the mend. Folks,
thanks, Dave.
We'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success,
Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services,
or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Good to have you be with us, folks. We're talking on the Hot Topic segment today about mortgage fraud. Shocked me to realize that it's on the increase again. There's a CoreLogic report that came out in December of 2012, just a couple months ago, okay. And it really revealed some interesting things. Mortgage fraud spiked big time from 2005 to 2006, and then it really continued all the way through to 2009 is what this report said. Between 2010 and 2011, mortgage fraud was flat. But the CoreLogic report stated that between fourth quarter 2011 and first quarter 2012, there was a significant uptick in what they refer to as the CoreLogic National Fraud Index. I thought it was noteworthy, and when we went out and searched for a guest to have on the broadcast, and we are very fortunate to have Mike Davis with us. And I'm going to let Alice Alvey introduce Mike on the broadcast. But so, Alice, I'll turn the mic over to you and let you introduce Mike and tell us how you met him.
Well, thanks, Dave. I was asked to speak at the Ohio Mortgage Bankers Annual Conference a few years ago, and I was going to be speaking on mortgage fraud. And I received a call from one of the folks on the committee who was friends with Mike. And he asked me, he said, Alice, would you be interested in having a friend of mine speak? He's currently in prison for mortgage fraud. And actually, Mike and I talk about that it's really a lot like title fraud as well. And I said, really? So a convicted felon, they'll let him out of jail while I'm speaking? And then he said, absolutely. He does some speaking already for community service work while he's serving his time. So I said, all right, I'm up for that. And Mike and I got a chance to speak one time before the event. And basically I started talking about general mortgage fraud, and Mike was coming in to speak on his story. The day of the event, while I was standing at the podium speaking my section, I could see into the hallway, and I could see the police officer working his way around the hotel with the dog. You know, the hotel wanted that. You know, there was security coming in ahead of Mike to check out so I got the German Shepherds scoping the hall, and then I see the police officer come in, you know, with his full armed garb. It looked like a SWAT team member come in with Mike in his, I think you were wearing a gray suit. I don't think it was orange. And he came in to speak, and you have to keep in mind, so Mike owned a mortgage company and a title company in Ohio, and therefore the audience knew firsthand of Mike Davis, and you could have heard a pin drop in that room as Mike went to tell his story. And he spent about, 45 minutes or so telling his story, and it was very, very interesting and gets the message home. We have been working with Mike over the last couple of years. He's been conducting some training classes. Mike does this all. He doesn't get paid for it. We do make the contribution to the Victims Fund, and his story is very moving. We've had people in tears in our class, and of course we've had people angry too. So I'm going to turn it over to you, Mike, to tell the people a little bit about what happened and what you served prison time for.
Well, good afternoon, Dave and Alice, and it's a pleasure to be on the show with you today. I heard you speak earlier, Dave, and to say that mortgage fraud cost me more than I was willing to pay and took me further than I wanted to go will go down as being unquestionably the understatement of my life. It was a bad deal. I'd like to start, and I always start by saying that regardless of what I say here today, because I am brutally honest about exactly what happened and what went down, I deserved every single thing negative that happened to me. I did it. I did what I was accused of, and I paid a wicked price, and I deserved every bit of it. So I like to get that out of the way up front. But basically, my story is relatively simple, and I think that it probably is the way that most of these things start. And
can I interrupt right there, Mike? Because I
sure.
think a lot of listeners are hearing this. Well, I'm not doing anything criminal. I don't have to listen to this. What's going on? I mean, there's all kinds of reactions that people get. I think what was really interesting when you and I spoke yesterday and I got a chance to speak with you for the first time, you said, you know what, Dave, it's really interesting. What starts out as crime, what people think is there's not this diabolical plan to go commit a crime. It actually starts relatively innocently and then creeps on you, if I recall correctly. I think it's important that our listeners start that you didn't start out going, how can I scam the system, if I recall your story.
No. You're absolutely correct, and I, through my course of time in prison, I met any number of other individuals who had committed similar crimes to mine, and there are some very definite similarities among everyone, and it's that all of these people, those around them, when the whole thing came out, all said, I cannot believe that guy did that. He is the least likely guy to do that ever. And what happens is it starts out very small. In my case, my business was small and I was having some problems, and I essentially chose one day to do what was easy as opposed to doing what was right, and I took $5,300 out of my escrow account to cover some business expenses with every intention of putting it back the next week. I was absolutely going to do that. And the next week came along, and unfortunately I was in the same position the next week as I had been previously when I made the choice. The only difference was at that time I now had a new dynamic to face, which was when I did it before, the instant that I did it, I had committed a felony.
Right.
And so now it becomes a panic situation of trying to cover your tail and figure out a way to put the money back, and one bad decision turned into 20 bad decisions, which turned into thousands of bad decisions, and by the time the whole thing was over, it was 7 years later, and my escrow account was down $6.7 million.
Oh. So what started out with a $5,300 cash, just going to borrow some little money, take something from the left pocket, put it in the right pocket, just for a short time, led to a
$6.7 million.
Wow.
There were 43 families involved in this thing, and it was all refis. There were 43 families who woke up on December the 28th of 2003 to find out that they had two loans on their house. And there was a very sizable wholesale lender, a very, very well-respected wholesale lender who came in and made almost everyone whole within a short period of time, and they took an enormous financial hit that almost bankrupted them. And you start going down the path of all of the things that these things cost you, and one of the worst is knowing what you've done to people that you respect,
right,
and you can't get it back. Once you do it, you can't get it back.
I just want to score that, because for those listeners that are out there and going, you know what, I've not done anything really wrong, but you know what, it is so easy to start down the slippery slope. And I think that's why we're doing this broadcast, is that there are good people doing things on the fringe and making some bad decisions. And the reason we bring Mike to this broadcast, and I'll toss the mic to Alex to talk about what's being done now, what you can do to avoid it, how you can catch it if you're a business owner, and some of the things there. But the reason we're bringing Mike on, and I appreciate Mike so much you coming on, is to say how easy and innocently you can start down something like that. And we color it with the pressure of financial. That's why we have the Profit Doctor out there talking about how to manage things so that you don't get into those fixes. But yet people do. Every business does get in a cash crunch. It's just part of owning a business. So those are the decisions made. So Alice, back to you. So what have you and Mike begun to do to team up on this topic. That's a great story, and I appreciate it, and I'll let you take it from here, Alice.
Well, I think it's important for people to understand exactly how it happened, to understand the fraud with, what's involved in misuse of escrow funds to pay off loans, how does that math work, and really, kind of answer the question, how did Mike get away with it, to the tune of $6.1 million? So, Mike, do you want to add to that a little bit? Tell folks a little bit more about how it happened and what went wrong.
Sure. Essentially, what I did was a Ponzi scheme, and it's like so many of the other Ponzi schemes that you've heard about over the years. They start off small, and they continue to grow. And in my case, it was fueled by three specific areas where the money went. The first was advertising. I was a three-person shop when the whole thing started, and my shop grew, and I became successful at doing what I did to continue the fraud until I could figure out a way to pay it back. So much of the money went toward advertising, and at one point I was spending $100,000 a month on advertising and doing $25 million a month in volume. And so unfortunately, because of the way that the whole thing worked, a lot of that money was continuing to come out of the escrow account. The second area, and this is where it becomes so critical that people understand how you can go down the road on one of these things, is what I call the interest on the float. It's where money just goes into a black hole. It didn't benefit anybody that you can point a finger at. But when I was doing what I was doing, I was holding checks because the escrow account was short. I would hold checks until enough money came in to fund new loans that I could pay off the old loans with. And so over time, it went from I needed to hold one check to I needed to hold 25 checks of $150,000 at a time to be able to carry the float. Well, every one of those checks that I was holding was continuing to accrue additional interest. Each of those loans was accruing additional interest of anywhere between 3 days to 5 days, sometimes depending on volume flows. I was holding checks for 20 to 25 days before I was paying them off. And so every day that loan accrued additional interest was more money that I had to take out of the escrow account. So you had that, which at one point that was about $100,000 a month drain on the escrow account. And the other part of it was I was living a lifestyle that was wholly and completely inappropriate for my business and what was going on within my business. And I was spending, on a personal level, a lot of money that I had absolutely no business spending. So when you add those three things together, at some points the escrow account was being drained at the end by $200,000 to $225,000 a month, where it was just getting worse. And it went on for 7 years, but about 5 years in, I knew that there was absolutely no way that I was ever going to be able to bail myself out. And it was just a function of just hanging on until it all fell apart.
Well, one of the things I find interesting in the hanging on part, and Dave, to the point of, do companies have enough controls in place to really catch? And Mike, I remember you telling me you kept your loans clean. You were one of the most compliant loans from application to closing.
Yeah, our average FICO score was about 10 points higher than the national average. Our loan amount was about $10,000 higher than our average geography. One of the things that our wholesalers continued to rave about was our low delinquency. And I did a lot of things to make that happen. My staff was absolutely wonderful in terms of their knowledge and their education, and I hired really, really strong people to be able to run the business at the level that it needed to be run. And so there were all of these factors that went into it. So when lenders looked at us, because of our performance standards, they looked the other way. They didn't. If an occasional hiccup came along, if a customer called and said, "Hey, what's going on? My loan didn't get paid off," they would call and I would find some way to take care of it immediately. Our staff, who knew nothing about anything that I was doing on the other hand, had one edict, and that was, if there is a problem with a loan, you will stop what you are doing and you will take care of it instantly at that moment. And you will do nothing else until you fix this problem for the title company or the wholesale lender or whomever. It didn't matter. It was fix the loan problem now. And so when you operate within a culture like that, when the occasional thing pops up, people either are complacent or they choose to look the other way or they say, I don't know. And it's absolutely the wrong thing to do. If there is something that makes the hair on the back of your neck stand up, or if there is an event that is customer related where there is a money issue that doesn't seem right, or if there is an issue in other forms of fraud, VOEs, VODs, things like that, if something doesn't seem right, you must confirm, because in truth, there is absolutely no reason why my fraud should have gone on for any more than a year. It should have been shut down within the first year.
That's amazing. So, Alice, you are doing something about this. I'm looking at little less than 10 minutes. We actually probably a little less than 7 minutes less on the broadcast where we have to start getting ready to go. I want to hear about things business owners can do. First of all, there's an awareness. You can get into this problem easier than you want. So if someone owns an escrow company, that's why I've always been, I caution our clients, if you own an escrow company, just do not mess with the two funds. Just don't even go there. It'd be better not to have it. The extra income you have, it opens the door to these kind of temptations. But Alice, what other things are you saying or that you're educating? Because you now train people, Alice, based on some of this. So I think let's get into some of that ounce of prevention to prevent that pound of crime or pain.
Right. I notice what Mike is saying there, the idea of, because it was normally a good customer who was normally in compliance, if they made a mistake, people just solved it and moved on.
Right.
One of the things, and this is Fannie Mae's big point, too, on what is loan quality initiatives that should be in the front end of the process. Everybody's doing verbal VOEs, but is anybody capturing at your shop how many times you're finding that the borrower really isn't working there? And are you having that roll up to your quality control areas, and you're looking for patterns? Is there a pattern in, it's happening at this particular real estate office or with this particular loan officer or processor or whoever, that there's a higher rate of borrowers not being employed? Because in those statistics that you brought up, Dave, both the CoreLogic and the MARI reports talk about employment fraud being one of the ones that's still on the rise, where people are lying about how long they've been on the job or actually where they're working. And customers know how to set that up at the shop, and you've got to make sure you're capturing that data and analyzing it, looking for patterns. That's one of the biggest things we see slipping through the cracks right now.
Interesting.
Alice, if I could jump in there just for a second. One of the problems that you have with that too is it becomes, if let's say for instance you've got an originator, you've got a processor who is cutting corners and they're doing well, and you've got other originators or processors who aren't doing as well, you run the risk of creating a cultural problem where it becomes acceptable to do these things, and they'll suck people in who are normally very, very good people. They can be sucked into becoming involved in fraud who would never think to do it on their own, but if others are doing it and getting away with it, it becomes cultural.
And, Mike, I think you've talked about the idea of, it's a slippery slope where people think, well, it's just a white lie to help the customer get the loan. They have the misperception that they're helping somebody get a loan by leaving information out of the loan file or altering a date by just a couple months in order to make it work.
I can tell you that when the FBI comes rolling up and they have had their fingers in every single file that you've touched for the last 3 years, these guys, to say that investigators, whether on a local police detective level or the FBI or any of the other three-lettered agencies, to say that they are good at their job would be it's an understatement. They are so slick. They know what you've done. They will catch you. Once you start down that road, there's just no way to get away with it, and it becomes the moment that you cross the line, you have created an environment where it is not if you get caught, it is when you get caught. I promise you, I have seen it firsthand. I know other people who have done it, and it's just not worth the risk, ever. One day of your freedom is too much to lose.
Yep. So important.
And you lost a lot, Mike. I don't want to share that with folks on, the consequences.
Well, from a consequences standpoint, I lost, I was sentenced to 9 years in an Ohio prison. And I ended up serving six before I was released, and I'm still under the thumb of the state of Ohio to this day, and will be for some time to come, where I have to report, and I'm very limited now on what I can do in this situation. So it's not over for me. I've been out for over 2 years now, and it's still not over for me. It cost me a 23-year marriage. It has hindered relationships with everyone in my family and friends. I've lost financially. I lost everything, which I absolutely deserved, and couldn't care less about. And it's funny, you see the financial things and the stuff you cease to care about very, very quickly in these situations. It becomes about relationships and experiences lost and opportunities lost. And even today, I do some public speaking on a pro bono level. I think, Alice, you mentioned the fact that I don't take a nickel for any of my public speaking that I do. And yet I still have a difficult time because of the stigma. People don't want to hear you speak for free on a topic that you have that much knowledge on that is so important that could help people. So you don't make the stigma go away. It is... I am a convicted felon. I will always be a convicted felon, and it's what I have lost. I can't even. You can't put a pencil to the dollar amount, or to the emotional part of it. And you live with the guilt every single day. It's just it's a tough thing.
And I think it's amazing to me is just how easy it was to get started in it. It was a simple, innocent cash flow thing. I have a cash flow crunch. I need to do this and do that. And, Alice, we see these easy things to start. And let's talk about employment verifications. Profit Doctor, you got a 2 cents on that?
Well, it's been an amazing conversation. I've enjoyed listening to it very much. It crossed my mind just as we were talking about the ways that fraud occurs, and we've talked on a number of the obvious ones. And in the South, we don't think about this very often, but in some states, in northern climates where you have a closing in November, and the homeowner wants to have the buyer wants to have the house painted, and so the mortgage company will hold out a closing funds to paint the house, and so the mortgage company in some states in northern climates will hold funds for the benefit of the buyer to then paint the house in the spring.
Right.
So they'll come in and do a holdback release later. And that's a temptation for mortgage companies to use that money. And I've actually seen that happen before. I think we need to accept that there's opportunities for fraud in a lot of different places. And for anyone to say that it never happened to me, I'd never do it. Well, you're going to make payroll. You're either going to get the money out of escrow, or you're not going to make payroll, and you're going to end your business. And so it's the temptation is there, and we just need to be aware of it anyway.
That's good thoughts. Alice, I was thinking about the employment right now. I'm thinking about the fact that so many people are, they're just being sloppy about verifying employment just before closing, and they let that slip further and further. That's another one of those areas that I think today, especially with that aspect of fraud increasing again. And give our listeners, Alice, a couple of tips that you can have. I'm looking at, we have 2 minutes left, almost 2 minutes on the broadcast.
If you're re-verifying employment any more than before the day of closing, you are and you better know your markets that you're doing business in where there are employment risks. I'm from Michigan. We verify employment as close to the day of closing as we can to make it real, to really know on that day they've got a job so that I don't have any risks. You make sure you're calling a couple different people within the shop. I have customers that do re-verification of employment 3 times during the loan process.
Wow.
Before processing, before underwriting, and then the day of closing, just to make sure, and making sure they're talking to somebody different because we've had customers set them up. We're better at appraisals. Certainly, a lot of factors have played into that the appraisals are getting much more scrutiny. So you've really got to be careful of, and then short sale fraud is the next one. You could do an entire program just on short sale fraud and the scams going on there to try and convince the bank the house is worth less than it really is.
Mike, I want to say thank you so much for taking time out of your day. You're not in the industry any longer. I appreciate so much you getting back and sharing with us, or getting to us and sharing with us your story. Appreciate it so much. We'd love to have you on again. Actually, I think we need to do more on this topic. I'd love to hear some of the things that I want to do a whole special session just for loan originators. So thank you, Mike. Appreciate you being on the broadcast.
My pleasure.
Alice, thank you so much for making the arrangements to have him here. And folks, we'll be back next week working on a couple interesting broadcasts, thinking about staying down these same things. But there's some many developments in FHA. That's where we're probably go, talking about what we need to do to keep FHA healthy and whole. Alice, it was so interesting to hear your rant earlier, and appreciate you getting into it, sharing with us all the knowledge. Folks, have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.